Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
It is that time, and I spoke with her this morning. We had lots to catch up on. She has been in the UK.
It was full on, but it was very, very interesting. There was, you know, I went and saw several people under my several different hats, and some really interesting things that I've brought back that we have to discuss now that I'm back here.
What were you over there for?
Well, I went over to do several things. So as the Minister of Internal Affairs, New Zealand is having to make some decision about our gambling legislation and how are we going to deal with offshore online gambling, so offshore gambling through the internet. And the United Kingdom's actually done quite a bit of work there already, so they've figured out a way to actually control that. So I went and had a meeting with their gambling organisation, and then, like the government's gambling, you know, gambling harm, gambling organisation. Then, as the Minister for Seniors, I had an appointment with the Office of the Minister of Loneliness in the United Kingdom, and also another appointment with the organisation in Scotland that has done quite a lot of work around loneliness and isolation. So that was fascinating.
Wow, they have a minister for loneliness.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, in England they just created it. They created it in January, and it was because of Jo Cox. Jo Cox, who was the MP that got shot, she had done quite a lot of work around loneliness and had drawn a lot of political attention to it. So in a way, it's a memorial to Jo Cox that they've created this position. They put some money there, and now they're going to actually put a focus on loneliness. So
that's awesome.
So that was interesting. Yeah, well, it was really interesting. And then as the Minister for Children, which was sort of most of the visits, was, well, actually it crossed over as Associate Minister of Education as well. So I went to Camden and Leeds and Doncaster, and child services are run by the city councils over there. So each one of those city councils that I went to see had an outstanding, a good or an excellent report from their, they have their independent review service called Ofsted. So I went to see what they had been doing, because they had turned around the number of children that they have in care and their youth justice numbers dramatically over the last 2 years. So they're working more closely with family and in family and that sort of thing. So I wanted to go and see and sit down and talk to them about what they were doing, which I did.
Is that because there is a more localised focus?
Yeah, I think that there is something to be said for that. The fact that they, you know, Camden looks after Camden and Hackney looks after Hackney. Having said that, I think that in New Zealand we can do that, because we're not, you know, we're not such a big country and we only got 4.5 million people. But I do think that the way that they structured, the way that social workers worked, was, and inside those social worker hubs that they had a clinical psychologist available to the social workers at all times. They had an administration person so that the social workers worked more directly with the child and family and didn't spend all their time on paperwork. So there were some things that they did that improved and gave the social workers more support to be able to work directly in family with children and families under stress. And I think there's some lessons we can learn from that.
Cool. Mm. That sounds like an incredible trip.
Yeah, and then I went to, and then as Associate Minister of Education, I went to a couple of schools that they called special schools, which aren't really, well, they're not our equivalent. They would be alternative education provision, really. But the one that interested me most was children from the age of 5 to 8 who had severe behavioural problems, so very violent, in other words. Mm-hmm. And those classes were run by a Kiwi teacher. And those children come to the special school or the alternative education school in the morning, and it was two teachers to three children, because these are very violent behaviour children, and these highly trained teachers basically educate the children. But when they start to use these particular behaviours, they are trained in appropriate restraint and behaviour modification. So the children go there in the morning, and a teacher from their school comes to watch and make sure that they understand what are the triggers for the child and so on. And then those kids have lunch at the special school, and then they go back to their mainstream school. So I thought, it's not something we do here, but I thought it was very interesting, and I want to talk to the activity centre people and our education, you know, like the education sector, and actually talk through whether this is something we could have a look at for New Zealand.
You mean having those separate schools working together with the main school of the child?
Well, we already have, in a way, we have 11, oh, there's actually 13 of them. They're called Old Tech Activity Centres, which is a funny name, but they are centres that provide specialist behavioural support for children from the age of 11 up. And they are doing very well on that. I think there's an Aero report coming out in a couple of weeks. But what I'd like to do is to actually see if we could use them more for children at a younger age. Because what the school in the UK told me was that when they deal with the children when they're younger, they don't come back when they're older. When the children realise how to manage their own behaviour and, you know, use self-control, then they settle. And so they don't then show up later on.
So it's about earlier intervention.
Yeah.
So what are all of the things that, I mean, did you go on this trip to bring ideas back to discuss, or are you implementing things, or?
No, it was mostly to go, because I've got quite a lot of decisions around Oranga Tamariki that I have to make. Like, for example, under legislation, Oranga Tamariki has to introduce a transition service out of care for our young people at the age of 18, but stay in contact with them up till the age of 25. Well, we've never done that, so we don't have a model of how that looks to be done, and yet the UK does. So it was about going and having a look at how other people are doing these things, and then coming back and discussing it with, you know, in the New Zealand context, and taking the best parts of what other people are doing and seeing if they will work here in New Zealand.
Mm.
So it wasn't about just going and lifting something and bringing it back. It was about widening my understanding of what is possible and what's been working. And there was some stuff I looked at that I thought, there's no way we'd do that in New Zealand.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't suit us.
Well, because I was also going to ask, I mean, we are a different country. We are a different context. Technically, we're a colony of that country, and, you know, how would we then, I don't know, you can't really just lift those things and put them here because it just won't work.
No, but when I, like, for example, there's something called Mockingbird. Now, Mockingbird is, it's a way of working with foster families or caregiving families, right? So what it is there's a caregiver home, so how do I explain this? There's a caregiver in the middle of this hub of, say, five other foster families. That caregiver's house must have two spare bedrooms. Now, what that person is, they become like an auntie to those foster kids. So when the family needs a bit of a break from the foster kids, because many of our children have, you know, behavioural needs, and sometimes people just need a night off, they don't get sent to respite care, they get sent to aunties. So the relationship is so much more family orientated in the way that the Mockingbird model is set up. So you see, we don't do that here.
Mm.
So it was things like that you could have a look at it. Well, those children are children, and children still need, across the world, they still want to be cared for, and they don't want to think that, oh, I'm going off to respite care now because nobody wants me. These children just think, oh, I'm going to spend the night at Auntie Tina's.
Mm. You know? Well, those people will have long-form relationships with these children.
Exactly. And what's happening is when they've been supporting the foster families in that way, the placements don't break down. So the children get a long-term, you know, family environment, because the family is better supported by that you know, the caring sort of the Mockingbird hub leader. And they get together, all the children and all the families get together once a week for a games night. So those children also get to interact with other children who are care experienced, who are foster children. So they realise that they're not the only ones in the world.
Hmm.
And they're able to interact with other children that are having similar experiences to them.
So that process is happening in the UK at the moment, you're saying?
In
New Zealand, would that, I mean, we'd have to also try and cater to Māori families or other...
Absolutely.
And put them with their own families, or...?
Well, everybody wants, ultimately, the goal is that for everybody to be with their own family. But, you know, can I just be a little bit clear about this? Most of the grandparents raising grandchildren, their children are Māori children, but they're also Pākehā children. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the reality of New Zealand, is many of our children are both Māori and Pākehā, or Pākehā and Pacifica, or Pacifica and Māori. Do you know what I mean? Like, for us to make sure that we treat these people as these children as whole people, we must recognise all parts of their family unit.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, will you be going to other places to look for other ideas, or
no?
Was it just
no.
the UK?
No, there's nothing on the plan, because I have to make these decisions relatively quickly. And what I know is what we've had in New Zealand. I've got some understanding of what's going on in Australia. The mockingbird model actually came out of Canada.
Right.
So, you know, that's a Canadian model, but it was the way it was, I was just happened to be in the UK and saw it implemented there. So, no, I think I've got enough information to start building a picture that I can present to Cabinet, which is what I have to do, about, and I'm not the only person doing it, like I'm not the person making all these, I have to make the decision with Cabinet, but, you know, there's a lot of experts in Aranga Tamariki with years and years and years of understanding of social work and social work practice that are, you know, they advise me on what is possible and what's not.
Brilliant. I look forward to the presentation and the announcement. I wanted to mention something else. I've read an article on Newsroom, which is talking about a group of academics that are basically criticising the waka jumping bill as being against MPs' basic rights, or breaching the Bill of Rights. What are your thoughts on that?
We don't agree, and neither does the current Minister of Justice and so on. It's interesting because there seems to be this, I'm not quite sure why all these people are not reading the words as the words are written, but deciding that this gives the leader of a political party the ability to throw out people that don't agree with them. And that's what they're all saying. That's what they're saying, the breaches of the Bill of Rights. That's actually not what the bill says. So what the bill says is there must be a majority of caucus, there's a whole process, there must be a letter sent to the speaker. Well, there's all sorts of parts to that bill. A leader of a political party can't just say, I don't like your tie, and so you're out. And interestingly enough, this piece of legislation, it has been amended. It was amended by James Shaw, actually. He amended it slightly from what was the piece of legislation that was live and in place in 2005.
So it has been in place for a long time. And what was the amendment?
I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head, but James tweaked it a little bit because he was, the Greens needed to also be supportive of their piece of legislation,
right,
which they were at the time, and it was in 2005, but it had a sunset clause in it at that time, which is why it's not, you know, it hasn't been in existence since 2008 till now. So really, we're just bringing back a piece of legislation that was in play before.
Right. And will it end at the end, if there is an end of this coalition?
No. I mean, no, it won't have a sunset clause on it.
Anymore, right.
Because the reality, that piece of legislation is really a recognition that we're in an MMP environment and that proportionality is what the people vote on. So, for example, if I was to cross the floor and vote against a policy that New Zealand First had campaigned on, then this piece of legislation could be used to say, well, you campaigned on and the people voted, you got in on the New Zealand First list. So the people didn't vote for you. They voted for the policies of New Zealand First, and you've decided that you don't stand for them anymore. So therefore, you should go. Now, that would be an argument to use this piece of legislation. But if you're an electorate MP, and the reason why that in this instance Winston did it, if he left his political party, so he left the National Party, and because he had been elected in his electorate seat as a National Party MP, he resigned and said, I'll go back to the people of Tauranga and I'll ask them if they want to re-elect me. And they did.
I see. So yeah, you can still cross the floor, for example, but you would have to be re-elected based on your new principles.
And I mean, you know, and it might be that for whatever reason, you know, look, this is an extreme. It would be an extreme case for this to happen, and there are several steps for it to happen. But the point is that people are voted in now on party policies. And so how do they split off and go and stand for something different when they were elected on the party's policies? And that's the point that is really trying to be made. This is a recognition of an MMP environment.
I did try and get in touch. Excuse me, sorry. That was Tracy Martin. But I did try and get in touch with the representative for that group who was criticising that bill. Her name is Claudia Granger, and we hopefully will be able to hear from her later in the week. She wasn't able to talk this morning because I want her to break down specifically what it is they disagree with. This stuff in the article is basically saying that it's an undesirable and harmful law which could damage New Zealand's democracy. As you heard from Tracy, they don't agree. There's obviously all these other aspects to it which mean you're essentially not letting people not, you know, believe in what they want to believe in. If you want to believe in something and it's not what your party believes in, you're allowed to do it, but you have to leave and go get re-elected. But I think we should talk more about that. Both the when Martima Davidson and Julian Genta were running for the co-leadership position, they both erred on answering what they thought about it. But James Shaw was part of changing it.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.